Ken is Cindy Medapool, a lifelong feminist and grassroots activist by inclination and by choice. Actually, I was quite intrigued by the invitation. When Aisha Imam sent me the invitation, I replaced Aisha Imam as the head of Baba for Women's Human Rights. And when I got the invitation, I thought, well, I don't know anything about the war on terror. I don't even know what that means. And so I can't speak to it. And so I sent him a response saying that I could talk about what Baba does and that my expertise, if you would, is gender and women living under Muslim laws as it pertains to Nigeria from the research that we did. And I did not expect to hear anything else. And so I went off to do some training in gender for some Sharia court judges. And to my surprise, I was invited to come. So I'd never been to Vancouver. And I thought this was a great opportunity to come, and that I would share what we're doing in Nigeria. And hopefully I would learn from the people who were going to present, and that it would help me once I got back to Nigeria, because I'm not a Muslim. I head an organization which is not about Muslim women, but women living under Muslim laws, whether they are Muslims or not. And of course, as a Caribbean woman with dreadlocks, I have a lot of to live down, even in the pursuit of the work that I do. And so I very politically put my dreadlocks up today. So I'll talk about Baba. One of the things that occasioned Baobab was that we looked at, we had a program called Women and Law. And it was a 3-year research project conducted simultaneously in 26 different countries where women live under Muslim laws. And at the end of the 3 years, for us in Nigeria, we realized that people can't just keep talking about Muslim or Islamic law. And we very strategically do not talk about Islamic law. We talk about Muslim laws. And we've come under attack because we've been told there's no such thing as Muslim laws. But we found out that there are Muslim laws based on the research. Because even in Nigeria, between the north and the south, the things that are practiced by Muslims in the north are not necessarily practiced by Muslims in the south. And yet they're supposed to be laws. And so we said, well, let's deal with the practices of men, Muslim men, that affect the lives of Muslim women and non-Muslim women who live in the Muslim north or the Muslim south. And that is how Baba came into being. Now, at the reintroduction of Sharia, it became very evident that women and women's sexuality were of great concern to Muslim men. And so, women and the poor and the weak were the ones who came under the scrutiny of the reintroduced Sharia, and therefore you had things like zina and fornication, and then you had the hizba, or what we would call the moral police, who were taking away women's human rights, even the rights laid down in Islam. And so we felt that we needed to not only defend their rights to appeal, but to let them know that it was not un-Islamic to appeal against a sentence. Islam gives you the right to appeal. But somehow in Nigeria, women were being told, well, it's un-Islamic. If you have done this, and we have not yet proven that any woman has committed zina in Nigeria, if you have done this, then it is your duty as a Muslim to accept without question the punishment that the court lays out. And Baobab have said that in our investigation, the men sitting on the court are not fit to sit in judgment on the women because they don't understand Islam. Because if they did, they wouldn't hand down the sentences that they did. And so we thought it was strategic, not just to defend the rights of the women, but to defend the rights in the Sharia system. And that is why when Amina Lawal's case became a worldwide issue, we very quickly said we did not want that kind of intervention because it was making our lives difficult. We were being attacked and given death threats because we had told the West to come in and be part of this, and we had not told the West to do any such thing. Because for us, it was strategic to win in the Sharia court so that there would be no more sentences like that from the Sharia courts. And when the international community was saying, well, these are barbaric punishments and so on, that's not language that we use. And we felt that that assumed that these women were guilty and so should be pardoned. And we were saying they were not guilty. And so this is one of the things that we do. And before there was Amina Lawal, there were many others, but Baobab in particular kept a low profile. We did not want to become visible and attack and then be unable to keep on defending the women. So we also felt it was we had to train and advocate for the training of the Sharia court judges. And we also felt that women needed to understand more about their own religion, because the poor, and the, as I've said before, were the ones, the uneducated were the ones coming under attack, while the rich males were not being accused of, or their daughters were not being accused of zina because they had the money to send their kids to England or the US or someplace to get an abortion. And I had a discussion with some learned gentlemen. And I said, what about, you're accusing young boys, because we also take on the cases of young, of minors who are being sentenced to amputations. And we consider that a women's issue. And so we take that on board. And we said, why are you asking somebody who stole two chickens and a loaf of bread to have vertical amputation when people who embezzle millions, who steal millions from the government and from the taxpayers, you don't deal with them? Ah, he said, you see, the Quran does not talk about embezzlement, but it talks about theft. You know, so there's no punishment for embezzlement, but there is for theft. And I'm like, I mean, I don't understand this. And so the best thing for us is to tell women, look at your religion, see what is listed in your, what does your religion say? And use the Quran to defend yourself. And so we did a book called, we have what we call bridge building meetings, because one of the things we wanted Nigerian Muslim sisters to know was that it doesn't matter whether you're a Muslim woman or a Christian woman or a woman who practices traditional religion. The point is that you're being oppressed, and you're Nigerians, and you're women, and that's the commonality. And so we have what we call bridge building meetings, where we talk to Muslim women, with women, using the Quran and the Hadith about their religion, looking at this, looking at what is the most option given for women, and what is the least option given, and what is being practiced in Iran, and Turkey, and Jordan, and Algeria, and Morocco, and what are the best practices that we can use that you can use in Nigeria. And then we do the same for Christian women, looking at the Bible. And when we run these programs, and so we call the two groups, and we work with them separately. And then we give the Christian women the view of Islam, and we give the Muslims the view of Christianity. And then in the second phase, we bring them together so that they can discuss and see that really, religion does not divide you. It's politics. Whether you're a Hausa woman from the north or a Yoruba woman from the south, politicians use, and I'm talking about religious politicians, they use the ethnicity and the religion to keep you divided so that they can continue to be in power. And that if you use your text, there's power there for you. You just have to find it. And I think that we have run afoul of men because they don't want you to, they don't want women to know what their religion says. And they ask us, well, do you speak Arabic? And we say, yes, we have female scholars who do speak Arabic. Ah, yes, but where did you learn your Arabic? You speak classical Arabic. Or we say, look, we speak Arabic. We read the Quran. In fact, we produce a book called For Ourselves, Reading the Quran for Ourselves, a feminist look at the Quran. Of course, that caused all kinds of problems, but we still managed to stay. At least this year will be 10 years since we've been doing the work. But when it comes to, for us in Nigeria, it's not that the war on terrorism is not something we know about, but you see, that for us, the issue is poverty, and the issue is patriarchy, and the issue is the control of women's bodies under the guise of religion, whether it is under Islam or Christianity. And for us also, culture is a serious problem, because when you get them on religion, they say, yes, but it's not our culture. So we're fighting the battle on several fronts, and we know that the women that we deal with say, well, it's not a war on terror, it's a war for oil. And so they say that they don't want to get involved in that fight for oil, because when elephants fight, the grass gets trampled. And so since we are the grass, let's see about staying at least upright, and let the politicians, the elephants, fight their battles elsewhere. And so, it's an interesting situation in Nigeria. Because right now we have an election coming up in 2007. And we are saying that women should vie for positions. And Muslim men who are in politics are telling Muslim women that it is un-Islamic to vie for political positions. And I'm like, why are you there? Are you, that, what you're saying is that you are not a true believer. If you believe that, if Islam prohibits political participation, why are you participating? You have no fear of Allah? No. And so we are working, I think we are making progress. Because we have won all the cases, and we've, let's see, about 10 or 12 women and 15 boys, we have managed to get them acquitted and discharged within the Sharia system. We have had a law. There has been no other sentence of stoning or amputation. But we are not resting on our laurels. We are saying that the women must understand the gender dimension, and that laws must be changed. But along with the education of rights and the advocacy for change in the law, there must be women in politics. And so we are now doing two trainings. I just came back from a training for Sharia court judges, the police, and judicial workers on human rights and gender training. And we're just about to do some training for women who want to go into politics. We're teaching them how to get really political. And that is part of our mandate, as well as trying to provide, at least in the vernacular, the quotations from the Quran, which will help them to advance their cause as the men who hold the power try to keep them out of the positions of power. And so we see that as a three-pronged attack to help women safeguard the rights that they were given in Israel. Thank you.